Okay, so we ran a nice yante, and now we're back to our regular schedule, back to our mitzvos, 650 mitzvos. For those who have been keeping up over the past, it's been 10 years now since we started this class, probably about 7-8 years since we started mitzvos. It's been a long time now. We're up to mitzvah 535 now. 535, so we're getting there. Maybe another couple years, but we're getting
another
there.
Another 10 years.
Something like that. So this mitzvah actually is something which I didn't realize was actually in the news today. But this morning I read an article about this mitzvah in the news. Which is, one thing we'll speak about is the idea of burying a body as soon as possible. We know that the Jewish concept is, if someone dies, you don't leave the body for days on end. And before the burial, you try to bury as soon as possible. I read an article this morning that New York City maybe, is adjusting their system of getting burial licenses, and there's a concern that's going to delay the time it takes to get a license. So both the Jews and Muslims are upset because both of us have in our religion the idea of burying immediately, and if we have to go through more legal loopholes to get our burial license, it'll delay the burial. And beyond that, when they change systems, it might have some problems and may go down for a day or two, which might delay burials by a couple days. Which would be against halacha. So there's actually a controversy about that right now happening in New York. So it's interesting. Just today, this mitzvah came up in the news when I was talking about it in class. So it's relevant for modern issues right now. But before we get to that, I want to talk about the source of it all, which is a little bit different than the direct mitzvah we're discussing. The source, we're in Parshas Ki Tseitzei still. This is in Devarim chapter 21, Chaval verse 22 and 23 discuss this mitzvah. And the way the mitzvah is actually expressed is from a very different angle. And the pasuk says, "Kiebeish chet mishpat mavis v'humas." If somebody is liable to capital punishment and is killed, v'saliso so'al eitz, you should hang the body on wood, on a pole. So there's a halacha we'll discuss more that certain people who are killed by the Beis Din, their body is actually hung up temporarily on a pole before it's removed. And we'll discuss why that is. But then it says, "L'salin nivlaso al ha'etz." Don't let the body remain overnight on this pole. Ki kavur tikbrenu b'yom, you should bury the body on that day. Ki kilas elokim talui. So this phrase actually has a lot of interpretations to it. Well, just the article translates it for now, is that a hanging person is a curse of God. So don't leave the body hanging, because a hanging person is a curse of God. Again, I'm going to get more into that. And then it continues, "V'lo'tames ad mascha," do not defile the land asher Hashem lokecha nosin lecha nachal, that Hashem has given to you as an inheritance. So a direct discussion of this verse is about somebody killed by a Beis Din. Someone is liable to capital punishment, is killed by a Beis Din. There's this idea of hanging the body on a pole, and it says, don't leave the body on a pole overnight, take it down and bury it on that very day. So that's where the mitzvah comes from. So I want to discuss it based on the actual pasuk, then we'll talk about more how it applies in a more modern sense. So number one is that there is a mitzvah that the Beis Din, once they kill a person, we'll talk about who, they do hang this person up on a pole. Now who are we talking about? So it's a discussion, it's actually a dispute in the Gemara, but the halacha is that after we have given skila, stoning, to either somebody who's served idols, Ovid Avodah Zarah, or a Megadev, somebody who's cursed Hashem. Those are two crimes which are liable to skila, to stoning. Those two types of criminals, if they are killed by the Beis Din, their body is then taken and hung on a pole temporarily and then removed. That's the lacha. There is an opinion that says it's anybody killed by Beis Din, but that's not the final ruling. The halacha is like the opinion that says it's only if someone does avodah zarah or if someone has cursed God. You hang the body momentarily, and it's really just for a moment, and take it down, and then you bury the person along with that pole. The pole goes into the grave with the person, and so too is the stone that they're killed with. The way stoning works, they would be pushed off a ledge, and then a heavy stone would be dropped upon the person. That's how stoning worked. So the stone the person was stoned with, and the wood the person was hung on, is buried with the person. Sorry for the graphic images, but this is what it is. And we'll talk more about why that is as well, but the simple idea is that people shouldn't see these items in the world and remember what happened. I mean, we don't want this to be in our memories. So if somebody is killed with a stone or hung on this pole, both those should be eliminated from our eyesight, you know, from our minds, you know, from our memories, so that we don't always reflect back upon this person's crime and the tragedy of the person's death. This idea of hanging the body only applies to men, not to women. So women would get killed through skila, but their bodies would not be hung upon the pole. Why is this done? Why do we hang a body on a pole? What's the point of this? So the Sefer Chinuch says that the idea is to publicize what was done, at least temporarily. I'm going to set an example. Meaning these are two of the most serious, most egregious averos in the Torah. That to serve idols or to curse God, it's hard to go to something worse than that. So therefore, we want to cause fear in others that they shouldn't do this crime themselves. We should understand doing avodah zarah leads you to no good and to a disgrace. The body is disgraced in this way. So the person is then hung on this pole so everyone can see, becomes more of a public display, and afterwards the person is buried. It's interesting, we'll discuss more, the idea of burial is a sign of respect to the deceased. And hanging on the pole is a sign of disgrace. Because we always strike a balance, meaning we're going to disgrace the person for what they did wrong. That doesn't mean the person is not a human being. The person still has a divine soul inside. The person may have done good things in their life as well. So even though they may deserve to be disgraced and deserve to be killed by a beis din, the body does not hang there in a way which is disgraceful for a long period of time. It's momentarily, you put it up, you take it down, and bury it. Again, we'll discuss more about that point as well. But the Torah then says after that, lo salini voso, don't leave the body hanging. Meaning, so you take the body, put it on the pole, take it down, and then bury the person on the same day. The Gemara says, and commentaries describe, this mitzvah is not just for those executed by a beis din. This actually applies to any person who passes away. We have the mitzvah not to leave the body overnight, to bury the body immediately. And that we're more familiar with than the idea of those executed by beis din. So we'll discuss how that extends out to normal everyday circumstances. But the main mitzvah, the way it's described in the Torah, is talking about someone killed by a beis din. So, and the idea is, it's as if to say, if somebody who's done such a terrible crime and is killed by a beis din, even that person gets the respect of immediate burial, then certainly a regular everyday Jew should get that same respect. And that's where we would take it from. So if we're going to give respect to a deceased person who is being killed by a beis din for their terrible crimes, and then certainly a regular everyday upstanding Jew should have that same measure of respect given to them. So that's how we extend it outwards. But the Torah tells us why. I mean, the Torah gives us a reason as to why you bury the body on the same day. And this is where you find a lot of different ideas concerning this mitzvah. And that was that quote that I said before, Ki kilas Elohim talui. The Torah says, bury the body on the same day, for, so again, the article translation was, the hanging person is a curse of God. But yet, there's many ways to explain this verse. I want to go through some of the different interpretations of those words, because these words are really the central point as to why this person has to be buried immediately. You know, in the non-Jewish world, often they do wait several days for burial, and they may consider that a sign of respect also. People should come, and they have to do viewings of the body. They want the person to be adorned properly. They want to make sure all the relatives can come in, and they want to make a bigger gathering for the funeral, which has a place in Jewish ideas as well. But in the non-Jewish world, there isn't anything wrong with leaving a body around for a few days. In Jewish thought, we only do that when necessary. So we'll have to explain the difference. But the difference really is these words, Kikilas Elohim Talui, that the hanging person is a curse of God. So what does that mean exactly? So I want to go through just a few different explanations of the Mefarshim to explain this. So I'll start here with the Rashbam. The Rashbam says, what does it mean that the hanging person is a curse of God? He says, when people see this person hanging, it may bring them actually to curse others, such as the judges who were involved in the case, who ruled to kill this person, such as the victim's relatives who may have, you know, pressed charges and pushed for the person's execution, or they may just be upset and angry and start cursing other people, or cursing God for this type of law to occur, you know, that people could be killed by a beis din. Meaning, the more public you make an execution, the more you're risking others to be upset about it. So, that's the Rashbam says. So according to him, Kilas Elohim Talui means that the hanging person will cause curses to occur. It's not that he is cursed, it's not he is a curse, but he will cause people to start cursing others. Basically, the lesson is that leaving the person hanging there in that pull is setting others up for failure. You're giving them this challenge, because when I'm contemplating an execution, in my mind suddenly all these doubts may occur, this anger and resentment, you know, may come up, and that's going to lead to no good amongst others. So the Rashbam says that, you know, even those people might be wrong. I mean, these people who are cursing others, they're wrong. The Beis Din went through due process. They're supposed to do it. It's a mitzvah to kill the person who deserves execution. They did what they're supposed to do. But even so, we don't want them to start cursing others and to harbor resentment. So we try to get along the process as quick as possible. So on the one hand, we do hang the body to scare others into not doing this terrible crime. On the other hand, we don't want to cause people to start getting angry and resentful and cursing others. So we take it down right away. That's the Rashbam says. Additionally, the Rashbam says, and this is really also based on the simple read of the Pasuk ends, L'satame es an mascha, do not defile the land that Hashem has given you. So we know that a mace, a dead body, brings tumah, and that it brings around bad impurity. And when you have a mace around, then there is the risk of becoming tumah. If you touch the mace, if you're in the same room as the mace, that's why Kohanim have to be very, very careful around the cemetery or in a hospital, etc., because of this issue. So therefore, the Rashbam says one reason to bury the mace right away is because it will bring impurity to Eretz Yisrael. I mean, this would be a reason for Eretz Yisrael in particular and in general for us to remain Tahor. But you don't want to have the deceased just kind of there for long periods of time, because it does run the risk of people becoming Tameh. That's another idea of the Rashbam. So Rashbam has two reasons, either because we don't want people to curse others because of this, and also in order so we try to reduce the risk of Tumah spreading. We don't want Tumah to spread. Next is the Evan Ezra. He gives a different reason for this. He says, then a very, very interesting idea. He says that the body of this person will bring to the area the curse of God. Meaning, if we were to reinterpret the verse, kill us Elohim Talui would mean that the hanging person is cursed, or brings about a curse. So the hanging person in the area brings about a curse, meaning that the actual land itself will in some way be impacted negatively from this person being there, in a spiritual sense. We don't mean physically, we mean spiritually. So the Evan Ezra is telling us that being in the vicinity of this body brings about a negative impact upon the person. And that's the idea when it says, do not defile the land. It doesn't mean through tumah. It means through this in this spiritual sense. It means some spiritual negative energy, negative vibes will be spread based on this body being there. So it's actually a very interesting idea that he's discussing, because what he's saying is something that we don't always pay attention to, but we've experienced it before. Let's take it from the other side of the equation. We know that being in certain places, there's a kedusha to those places. All of us have felt, when you go to Eretz Yisrael, there's a special kedusha in the air. You go into a shul, you should feel there's something special, different in a shul than elsewhere. You go to the grave of a tzaddik, you ever been to Maror Samachpelah or Kever Rachel or any place like that, you should feel something different, because the actual airspace and land are impacted by the kedusha around. That's in the positive sense. So we've all felt that, I hope, at some point. You go to the Kosel and you dive in there, you should feel there's a little more spiritual energy there than other places in the world. So there's an idea that airspace, that land, is something which does actually absorb and take in Kedusha. So the Evan Ezra is saying, well, really, it works the opposite way as well. When there's some negative spiritual force there, that's also going to impact the land around. There can be places where there's negative spiritual energy. So these are places that we don't feel it as much, we don't sense it as much. But places which we would look at as places of tumah, places of defilement, places of people who are acting in ways which are inappropriate, there is an energy around which is spread. It's actually very interesting. It's somewhat relevant to this week's parsha, Parshas Noach. And we know in Parshas Noach, the animals are killed along the people. So the question always asked is, though the people may have done things which are wrong, they stole, they're immoral, but what do you blame the animals for? Why did the animals get killed? So the rabbis tell us that the animals themselves were also acting immoral. They were crossbreeding amongst themselves. You know, they're mating with other animals, which they shouldn't be mating with. So the question still arises, well, animals don't have free choice. You know, animals don't know, oh, I'm supposed to only mate with the cow and not with the sheep. Animals don't know that. So what do you blame the animals for? So the Beis HaLevi, he says an incredible idea. The Beis HaLevi says that when human beings act in a certain way, it impacts the world around them. And when the human race was acting in such an immoral way, then the animals just pick up on it. Not because the animals made any choice to do the wrong thing, but the spiritual energy of the world was impacted by the way the human beings were acting. And therefore, just like the humans were acting immoral, the animals also started acting in the same way. So there is a spiritual energy which is spread, both for the positive and for the negative. So the animals deserve death, not because they're being punished, but we couldn't have these animals around anymore. The animals weren't following what Hashem created them to do. They weren't ready, they couldn't fulfill their purpose anymore. They've been defiled, so we had them killed out. Not because they're being punished for any wrongdoing. That wasn't their choice, but they're just no longer worthy of being in the world. So we're not always sensitive to spirituality, so we don't feel it all the time. And we may not even believe it. We might say, what do you mean this place is defiled? Or even this place is holy? But the truth is that there is this concept like that, and we do feel it when we go to special places. Now, we do feel it when we go to holy places and special places. We feel that sense of Kedusha, which impacts us. You do find stories of great tzaddikim. There's many out there that, they could sense when something is wrong spiritually. You know, you hear stories, for instance, maybe a great Rebbe who goes to someone's house to eat, and he wants to eat the food, and he says, no, these dishes were never toveled. They weren't put in the mikveh. And you're like, well, how can you tell? You can't see it on the dish. He can sense the spiritual force surrounding the dish. He says, I can't eat on this plate. You never toveled it. And there are many stories like that. You know, the tzaddik won't eat the food. And they'll figure out why, and they find out later on the food wasn't kosher. There's been some problem in the kitchen or in the shechita or whatever. But people on very high spiritual levels can sense the reality of the spiritual world in the physical world. So we don't always sense that on our level, but we should know that it exists. So the Ebenezer tells us that having this deceased body around is going to impact the area negatively, and therefore we should bury the body immediately. Now, does that mean only somebody killed by Beis Din or any deceased body? I'm not sure. It could be only somebody who's been killed by Beis Din who's considered such a Rasha. Maybe his body impacts the area negatively versus other bodies. But that's his idea. The Sefer Achinuch gives another idea here. So again, we're going to explain the words Kilas El Kim Talui, which he will translate that it's a curse to Hashem to have this body hanging. So meaning that this body hanging itself represents a curse to Hashem. This is the third interpretation. So the first one was that the body hanging will cause others to curse. The second one was that the body hanging will curse the area around. And the third interpretation now is the body hanging will be a curse to Hashem. And the Sefer Chinuch says, because it's going to be a disgrace to Hashem when people walk by and see this person hanging on the pole, and they'll say, that person's hanging because they cursed Hashem or served idols. Just the memory of that event itself is considered a chilul Hashem. The fact that we should be thinking about somebody in the world who cursed Hashem, who had such the audacity that can curse Hashem himself, we don't want that to be even around us. Just to recall, the events are that bad. So there are some actions which the presence of the people who did those actions is just so disgraceful that itself brings disgrace upon Hashem himself. That's the Sefer Chinuch's idea. So therefore, according to him, Kilas Elokim Talui would mean that the hanging person is a curse to Hashem himself. So that's the Sefer HaChinuch. There's a fourth interpretation, which is from Rashi, which actually in some ways I think might be the deepest interpretation of them all. Rashi quotes from a Medrash, and Rashi says, in terms of translation, it's similar to Sefer HaChinuch, and that Kilas Elokim Talui means that it's a curse to Hashem to have the person here. But he gives a different explanation. The explanation before was because you'll see the person, you'll remember his treacherous act, and that'll be this disgrace to Hashem. Rashi says, and he quotes from a Medrash, he says that a human being is created in the image of God. We know we read last week's Parsha and Parsha's Bereishis that Hashem created Adam a Betzelem Elokim, in the image of God. Betzelmeinu, Kidmuseinu, in our image, in our mold. So he then says, there is a mashal, there's an analogy he gives. There's two twin brothers, identical twins. And one of them becomes a nobleman, and one of them becomes a thief. And the one who is a thief is captured by the king, and he is hanged and put to death. So when people walk by and see the person hanging, they'll think it's the nobleman. because they're identical twins. So they're going to think the nobleman's hanging, and really it was his brother. That's the mashal Rashi gives. So the idea being, if the human being is made in the image of God, and our body is left there in a state of disgrace, so that itself is a disgrace to Hashem, because we're in His image. Now this has the possibility of giving us, you know, the incorrect approach to the idea. I mean, obviously Hashem has no body, and Hashem doesn't look like us. I mean, it'll look like Him in any physical sense. Yeah.
Why did they hang the body to start with? After He's stoned or killed, why did they hang it?
Because they want to make a public display, so others should see and be afraid to do that avera. So they're trying to make, but they don't want to do it for too long. No. That's the point. He shouldn't lay there in disgrace. It should be a quick, you know, up, look, put him down. That's what it should be. But Rashi is telling us a very deep point. And again, we can't ever think Hashem actually looks like us. So we look like Hashem. That's that. Hashem has no body, and we should never have thoughts like that. But what does this mean exactly? So the Sifsei Chacham explains, in particular, this relates to a Jew, because since we're called Hashem's children, it says, "Banim atem Hashem akechem," you are children to Hashem. So if we're Hashem's children, and we're put in a public display of disgrace, that itself is the biggest disgrace to Hashem, because you're seeing the king's child, who carries his image, in whatever sense that is, they're in a state of disgrace for terrible crimes that they did. That itself is considered a curse to Hashem. That's how Sifsei Chacham explains. But that's not exactly what Rashi is saying. Rashi is saying something even more. There's some idea of the image of Hashem that we're in. There's a divine part of ourselves. So I just want to explain this maybe in two different ways. The first way is really I guess a more Kabbalistic approach, and the second way is very relevant to our original discussion of a body being buried immediately. But the more Kabbalistic approach, which really is described by the Nefesh HaChaim, the Chaim of Elujin, he tries to explain what does it mean the word Hashem's image. Meaning, again, we never put any physical aspects to Hashem. If we do, we look at that as heresy. It's not Bikursus. We don't believe Hashem has any physical aspects. So the way he explains it is that our body is made in a way that we can learn about Hashem from our body. Meaning the Torah very often describes, the Yad Hashem, Hashem's hand. Or it says, "Enei Hashem lokecha ba," the eyes of Hashem are upon the world. So Hashem has no hand, Hashem has no eyes. But there's something Hashem, an action Hashem does, which is referred to as the eyes of Hashem. So we have no clue what that means, except for Hashem gave us eyes. So now I say, my eyes perceive, my eyes see what's around me. So Enei Hashem means that Hashem sees what's happening. Now it doesn't mean Hashem has a physical organ called an eye. That's absurd. But it means that now that Hashem made us with eyes, we can understand a little bit about Hashem Himself. We have hands, and we know that our hands, they can act. Our hands can take things, put things down. Our hands can hit. Our hands can show love. Our hands can show affection. Our hands can do a lot of things. So when it talks about the Yad Hashem, now I have a clue what a Yad Hashem is, what hand of Hashem means, because I have a hand. Hashem has no hand, but Hashem does things that are referred to as the hand of Hashem, and Hashem made us without any hands. We wouldn't know what that meant. We'd have no idea. So Hashem made our body with hands. Oh, so now I understand what it means when the Torah says that Hashem has an action we refer to as the hand of Hashem. Same thing. We talk about Hashem hearing. So Hashem has no ears, but we know what hearing is because Hashem gave us ears. So now we can understand what it means when it says Hashem hears something. So when we say our body is made in the image of God, it doesn't mean they took a picture of Hashem and us. We look the same. Chas v'shalom, it can't be that way. But what it means is that Hashem performs actions which relate to what our body does, and therefore we can understand Hashem through our body. So that's one idea of the resemblance between us and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Human beings of all creations, human beings have that resemblance in that we can do things that are similar to Hashem. That Hashem sees and we can see, Hashem hears and we can hear, Hashem creates, we can create in our own ways. That's all a part of being B'Tselem Elokim. But just to take it from a different angle, and this one is very relevant to our relationship with someone who's deceased. Rashi talks about the idea of the human being in the image of God, which means the human being is something which really has two distinct parts. We have our physical element and our spiritual element. That was last week's parsha. Hashem created Adam from dust of the earth, and then infused into him this nefesh chaya, this living soul. So we are a combination of two parts, a physical part and a spiritual part. When a person dies, so what's left is only the physical part. The spiritual part ascends to Hashem, and the physical part remains. When that remains, So now there's a big void. Because you look at the person and say, this is a human being who used to be alive, used to have feelings, used to laugh, used to talk, used to be part of our lives. And now all you see there is a lifeless body. And what happened is because the neshama has left the body. It's just the physical part. So in a sense, there's a disgrace to that person because you're expecting to see a real, animated, emotional, living person. And all you see there excuse my language, a piece of meat. That's all you see. That's all you see there. So that itself is a disgrace because you're expecting to see the image of God in front of you. And you say, how is this the image of God? This is a lifeless, motionless, emotionless body. That's all it is. So having that on display would be a disgrace to God because you're expecting to see something godly over here, and it's not. A human being is godly, but what we do is godly. We have the divine spirit within, we have the nishmas chayim, and that neshama is supposed to be within us, the divine spark. When human beings act, we do sense a little bit of godliness in our actions. We have the power that Hashem refers to as something which is, you know, almost godly power, it says in Tehillim. We're very powerful. But when the person dies, you're expecting something which is just not there. And you're saying, how is this the image of God when it's lifeless and motionless? So that having that is a disgrace. A deceased person is just flesh without any spiritual aspect. And then we would equate the person to an animal. An animal, we view it also. An animal is just flesh with no spirituality. So the mitzvah over here is to say that even though the person may deserve this disgrace because they have violated the Torah in a very, very serious way, and they had to be killed by a beis din and hung up on this pole, we can't leave the body there in disgrace because that's a disgrace to Hashem himself. Because this body is supposed to be the Tzelem Elokim, and look at it now. This is no longer the image of God. It's lacking that divine spark. It looks merely like an animal's body because it's lifeless and has no spirituality within. So that's the idea based on Rashi. Of Kilos Elohim Talui. So it's the idea again would be according to Rashi that the body itself laying there in disgrace is a curse to Hashem. Because we're looking for something here which is the divine spark, which is the divine, which has the Selam Elohim, and it's just not there. It's missing. And there's something very, very incongruous about this because we're expecting human being and all we see is motionless flesh. So those are the four different explanations of the mitzvah of why the person killed by a beis din should be buried immediately. So now we have to understand how it applies to a typical person who after 120 years passes away. So again, we said the mitzvah is not just for someone killed by a beis din, but the mitzvah is for any person, any Jew who has died. Someone who dies, the mitzvah is, you know, at face value, you bury them the same day that the person died. You should not leave the body overnight. Now just to explain, now we know it's very common practice, the person does not get buried the same day. Very often, the person may get buried a day or two later. So, halachically, where does that come in? Happens to be in Yerushalayim, the practice is to bury on the same day. It's rare in Yerushalayim, to my knowledge, to find anyone who delays overnight. That's their practice. So, in Yerushalayim, funerals will happen almost immediately, if not sooner. But outside Yerushalayim, there definitely is a practice that we leave the person often a day or two. Yeah.
Question. When a person passes away right after Shabbos on Friday night,
so then you have to wait. You can't do a kavura on Shabbos. Then you would it to Sunday. Even Yerushalayim do it to Sunday there, or mostly Shabbos they would do it. Sometimes you do it right after Shabbos. You could do it at night. Yeah,
that's what I really was asking.
Right,
it's done at night.
I don't know what the practice is, but it could be done. It could be done at night. So yeah, I'm not sure what they do in a case like that. Right, it could be done at night. So the Shulchan Aruch says that you're not allowed to leave a deceased body overnight unless you're doing it for the honor of the deceased person. Such as, the Shulchan Aruch says, to bring the person a casket, to bring the tachrich and the burial shrouds, to bring the proper people to give eulogies, or so the relatives could come, or to let others know so there could be a bigger gathering at the funeral. So what we rely upon typically when somebody does pass away and we wait a day or two for the funeral, that's usually because we're doing it for the honor of the deceased. If someone passes away and we don't have, and you know, let's say the relatives don't know, and we know the person would want the relatives to be there. So we're not going to say, okay, we're taking care of this in half an hour, even though they have relatives who live across the country. So there's a heter, you're allowed to wait in that case so the relatives can come in. If there's not a proper casket or proper burial plot, I mean, you have to have what the person needs for burial. Yeah.
Okay. But what about the person who sits with the person? Does someone sit with them until the burial, or?
Yeah. So we don't leave a mace on its own. We always have somebody with the mace, right? Yeah, there's always a shomer. But that's where the heter comes from. So common practice, again, very common practice is certainly in America, is we do often wait a day. And that, not always, but often, and that's usually so that the deceased can be given the proper honor. Because if we don't have the proper, if the person would have people coming to the funeral and no one's there because it's too quick, that's going to be a disgrace to the deceased. It's not honor to the deceased. So the mitzvah does allow, in order for kavod hames, that we could delay if needed. But in general, the mitzvah applies even in America. So if there's no reason to delay, you should not delay. So there's a tshuva, a response from Moshe Feinstein. And he was asked the question, I'm not sure what it's like nowadays, but you know, in his time, very often in America, when there was a holiday, the cemeteries would be closed. And if you wanted to be buried, you have to pay an extra fee to get the workers to come in. So he was asked the Shaila, are we obligated to pay the extra fee, whatever it is, for burial on an American holiday, or can we wait in order to save the family money? And he said, you absolutely have to pay the extra fee. He said, in halacha, the only excuse is for the honor of the deceased. If it's more expensive, that's your problem, but if it'll bring the deceased to the same honor, then you have to pay the money and have burial done as soon as possible. So again, I'm not sure the practices are nowadays in the cemeteries, I just can't remember, but that's sort of Moshe says that that's not an excuse. You know, even if it'll cost you more money, you have to still do it the same day. In terms of the reasons that we said before, so some will apply to a regular person who's deceased and some won't. Meaning, for instance, the idea of the body bringing others to curse Hashem or curse judges or curse their friends, a regular person shouldn't bring a person to that. You know, somebody who's been executed by Beis Din may get you upset at the judges, may get you upset at the witnesses, etc. A regular deceased, you know, upstanding citizen is not going to bring you to curse any judges or any witnesses typically, so that reason would not apply in a normal case. The reason that it's a disgrace to Hashem to have a criminal on display also wouldn't apply to a regular Jew. But the idea that the body itself is lacking the neshama, that's really the primary reason that applies on a regular basis. Because any person who passes away, their body is lacking that spiritual element. And to have that person lying around in that manner is a disgrace to the person and to Hashem.
Is that why it's always the closed casket?
Yeah, exactly. So in the non-Jewish world, they have this concept of viewing the deceased. And we don't do that, because what you're viewing is not the person that you loved and cared for all this time. Because the person you only care for had a neshama inside. And what you're viewing is just a tiny part of them. And we don't believe that's not viewing the person. And that's a disgraceful way to view the person. You want to see the person in the way that you knew and cared about them and loved them, not in this lifeless, motionless manner, lacking the spiritual element inside. So that's correct. That's why we don't believe in having the body there on display, as they do in many non-Jewish circles. The closed casket. It's the dignity of the mace that they should only be seen with the neshama inside. It's not dignified for them to be seen in a lifeless way.
And also with the plain, plain pine casket.
So the plain casket, and really, I think there's two parts to it. And number one is that we do want the body to deteriorate, disintegrate, as soon as possible. Like in Eretz Yisrael, they buried straight into the ground, just wrapped up in a sheet. There's no casket at all. American law requires a casket, and sometimes even like a cement box or something, so we do it in that way. And the idea of being plain is, number one, that will still speed up the disintegration. And number two, I think very similar to the custom that we have to just use plain white burial shrouds, so you don't want to embarrass anybody else who can't afford the fancy casket. So I think you have two elements there. In the non-Jewish world, they'll have these very elaborate caskets. But for us, we don't believe in that, because why are you flaunting your wealth at this point?
People or something, people, and they make them.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I think everyone has their own practices. But yeah, they do that. But for us, simple light shrouds. We hope the body disintegrates immediately, as soon as possible. And that's our practice. So in Yerushalayim, it's actually very, if you've ever seen a funeral in Eretz Yisrael, it's much more emotional, I think, to see the body just go in, without the casket. And the casket kind of gives you some sort of buffer when it's happening, but then when you see them just take the body in the sheet and just put it in the ground, I always find it much more heart-wrenching in that way. So just an additional point is that you do find that, you know, the neshama and the guf, they interact in our lifetime. I mean, a person lives 120 years, they're a body and they're a neshama, and they're working together in tandem. So the Gemara describes in different ways, but there is a way that the neshama can impact the body, or the body can impact the neshama. So for instance, when Moshe Rabbeinu died, so his neshama didn't want to leave his body. The neshama said, the body that has so holy, it's so sacred, it's so pure, what about getting from going up there? I'm in a pure place right now. Meaning that Moshe's body had become so holy that it was almost spiritual like the neshama. On the other hand, the Gemara describes that somebody who lives a life of avera, someone who lives a life of immorality, someone who lives a life doing terrible things, so their neshama becomes attached to the body because the neshama becomes itself very materialistic and physical. So you find a way, the Gemara describes, you know, different manners of death, let's call it. And it says the most difficult type of death can be compared to taking thorns and pulling them out of wool, like it's, you know, tears. So different commentaries explain that's describing the separation of the neshama from the body. So in a case where a person lives a good life, so the neshama doesn't become attached to the body. The neshama does what it's supposed to do. The body is there to help out. And when the neshama is ready to leave, it goes. In the case of someone who does not do the right things in their lifetime, when the neshama becomes so entrenched in the physical, for the neshama to leave is a painful process. Because the neshama wants to stay here, not because it's holy here. The neshama wants to stay here because it feels attached to the body. On the other hand, Moshe Rabbeinu was on such a level that the neshama wanted to stay because the body was so holy. And then you find areas in between where the two just have, so I guess, call it a clean separation, which is, I guess, what no person should hope for, is that clean separation. But we do find these two things interact, which is why, you know, physically, a body does disintegrate. But the Gemara tells us, and there's many, many accounts to this very day, people who have disinterred bodies of great tzaddikim and said that they never disintegrated. Because the body has been, I've heard someone who told me he saw it with his own eyes, and he was involved in disinterments, they're called, and taking bodies from one cemetery to another, and he unearthed certain people, the bodies just were totally intact. And the idea there is because when the body becomes so holy because of the neshama's impact, it's not at all affected by the physical surroundings. So it's put into the ground, surrounded by the dirt and the bugs and everything else. But because the body has become so kadosh, Hashem does allow it to disintegrate. So to this very day, you find many accounts of bodies being shlemos, they call them, complete bodies, even after hundreds of years in the ground. That's all this relationship of the neshama to the guf. So a body without a neshama, typically, we look at it as a disgraceful thing. But yet, sometimes you can have a situation that neshama has impacted the body to the extent the body itself becomes holy, and you can perceive the holiness through the body. And that'd be a rare situation, but it does happen even to this very day. So that's really this concept. So it begins with the person executed by a Beis Din, but it applies to every single Jew who passes away. There's the idea to get the person buried immediately and not to leave the body sitting around in any disgraceful way. And this, we believe, is the greatest honor you can do to someone who's deceased, is to bury them immediately, surrounded by their family and their friends in an honorable ceremony, and not to leave the body there, you know, in its form lacking the neshama, to be viewed as in its what we look at as a more animalistic, you know, form of the body. Yeah.